All right, move a little closer.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, you're going to be fine. You're going to be fine. And you do a little talking right now. Let's just check before we begin. You are Jonathan Levitt.
I am Jonathan Levitt.
Okay. Because I invited you on the show, and now you're here, and I just want to make sure it's actually you.
It is actually me.
Sometimes we get like an alien replicant. Anyway, that's another story.
I haven't shed my skin yet.
Yet. Are you going to shed your skin on this show?
Just give me, you have to just push my button. Push my button and it'll happen.
I don't know. There's so many.
I have three buttons. I have three.
Three?
Yeah, I don't want to talk.
And that's just a mole.
That's right. Three and a mole.
That's a mole. That's okay.
Title of my new book, Three Buttons and a Mole.
That's actually a good title.
Yeah, it is.
I'm going to introduce the show. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Comedy Death Star, the podcast that digs into the dark side of comedy. I'm your host, Denzel Myers. Our guest this week is magician, actor, host, and celebrity judge. I want to ask more about that specifically. Jonathan Levitt. We will meet Jonathan in a moment, but first, a message from our corporate overlords. Comedy Death Star is a production of Actors Comedy Studio and acsdigital.tv. That's the arm that is all things digital. Yeah. I'm Denzel Myers. Our guest today is Jonathan Levitt. Hello, sir.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. I'm really far away. I'm really far away.
People like to say it like that. Hello.
Hello. I know we do. We do. Hello. In fact, I opened my one of my magic performances, my close-up show, Close-Up Magic, which is a small intimate magic with card tricks and stuff. I open with hello.
Like people are very far away.
They're not far away, but I
like
just,
they are.
But I say it actually in a creep, more creep. Hello, and more creepy. Now that I think about it, it's. More
I got
creepy.
A question about that. before we do anything else, what do I want to ask you about? You've been acting on a bunch of TV shows, right? You've done that for a long time. You've hosted some programs, and I saw you at the Magic Castle.
Mm-hmm.
I think some people have heard of the Magic Castle, but I think a lot of people don't have any idea what that is or what that means. Can you just tell our listening audience
what the Magic Castle is?
A little about the Magic Castle.
Wow, what a special place. Yeah. It's here in Hollywood, and it's definitely becoming more well known on the national and world stage. But it used to, I would say that for a good period of time, if you lived in L.A., you knew what the Magic Castle was.
Yeah.
But now more and more people are starting to know about it, even though it's been there since 1963. The building has been there since 1908, and it is a private club for magicians.
That's
so in Hollywood.
Nobody else.
In Hollywood.
Yeah.
Well, no.
Well, but I mean, to be a member, you have to be in the circle.
Well, here's the story on that. Yes and no.
Don't burst my bubble.
Oh,
and
no,
me
no,
any
no.
smoke can get in.
No,
and just tell
no,
me
no. It's a private club. It's
okay.
a, yeah, you're the guy. You're the one guy.
I'm the one
right?
guy. That
it's like the post office.
Like,
we have the photo. We have a wall of 10 people that are not allowed into the Magic
Castle.
Sorry,
members only.
That's right. Oh, you, sir, you can come in, but he's not a member. Don't worry about that. Shut up, dude. So, no. It is it's a private club for magicians, right? So, you have to be a member to get in, or the guest of a member to get in. Members are magicians, or they are non-magicians. Who are still members, right? Associate members. But there are benefits to being a magician member.
I'm sure.
And to become a magician member.
You get to saw a lady in half. That's the benefit.
That is the. You everybody gets to do it once.
You don't have to wear a jacket when
right.
you saw a lady in half, yeah.
you do it, but that's interesting. There is a it's the last place in Hollywood that you have to dress up to get into.
Yeah.
It is the mecca of magic. Magicians from all over the world come to the Magic Castle just to be in the Magic Castle, and they hire on a weekly basis. Some of the best magicians in the world to perform at the Magic Castle. So it is really something special. And as a magician to perform there, it's really it's an honor to perform there. And such a fun place to be. People that are coming, whether they're magician members, non-magician members, or guests of members, they are interested in magic. They want to see magic. It's a vibrant place. It is unlike any place in the world. And anybody that goes there, they have that feeling. It's like you're stepping back in time.
Yep.
The place is an old Victorian building. It's gorgeous. The magic is great. It's very lively. Such
one of
a
the things,
place.
A couple of things I really enjoyed when I was there. First of all, the building's 100 years old, and that's beautiful. Also, when you go in, Can I say this? That it's a little room and you have to kind of slide the bookcase to the yeah, side to get into the rest of the club.
That's right. You have to say the magic words and the bookcase slides away goes. I'm not telling you what the magic words are.
No.
Because
I think it's enough we're telling people that there is a magic
word. Really.
That's going over.
So it is quite spectacular. And I would say that I mean, even if you look back at The Magician with Bill Bixby back in the 70s, it was based, not based, but he was, the Magic Castle was part of that. You know, I mean, there's...
I didn't know that.
We've shot so much there over the years, and it's been a backdrop for so many productions over the years. But it's really catchy. I mean, it's just known all over the world, you know?
The other thing I was going to say is that all the rooms are intimate.
Yeah, they are.
They're all small.
That's a very interesting point. There are three styles of magic. Close-up magic, which is the cards and the coins, the sleight of hand. Right. There's parlor magic. When you think about the old Victorian days of a magician in the parlor of your home. And there's the stage magic that we think about today with large illusions and what have you. And if we categorize magic into those three areas, the Magic Castle has three, I'm going to say main, but that's not a proper word because there are more than three, but three showrooms that we think of that encompass close-up magic, parlor magic, and stage magic. And so you can see magicians in all of those rooms when you come to the castle for that evening. And then on the weekends, we have two additional venues, a magician behind the bar, and another room like the parlor or the that middle size room. So even though the rooms encompass that, yes, they're all intimate. The close up room only seats 22 people or
right?
The palace stage, the larger stage, seats about 150. The parlor seats about 65. So they're still intimate even on the larger setting. It's really really a joy to be there. I've been a member there for 19 years. I've been performing there for about 18 years.
Yeah.
And it's been a real joy.
Yeah, and that was a great place. If you, I'm just going to recommend if you're in Hollywood, if you can... Find a way to get in there.
Right, then, I know. I mean, if you can find... But here's the reality. I'll tell you what, we are so busy these days. We recommend booking up for dinner and getting in about a month in advance.
Wow.
We put in about 350, 400 people there a night. It's just amazing. So if you want to be able to go to the Magic Castle, find a magician or a member and ask them for a guest pass. That's the way to do it.
See, that just seems funny. Like, find a magician. You know, magicians disappear all the time.
That's right. There's only 14 of us.
You're going to find a person who's an expert at disappearing and stealing your watch.
Right. I should say this. As a magician member, you have to go through an audition process.
I'm sure you
do. To get in. Yeah. We interview with a committee. I'm actually currently on that audition committee. Speaking of judging, but we are interviewing and auditioning members that want to become, or people that want to become magician members.
Yeah.
It's
fun. That's awesome. That's super awesome. One other question about this. Your bio says you started working in the early days as a street performer.
That's right.
Yeah, where was that?
I actually started as a street performer in St. Louis, Missouri.
Uh-huh. Which is where you're from.
Well, I moved there when I was 8.
Okay, well, you kind of grew up there.
Right. I lived in Iran before that.
I heard about that.
Yeah, and I was born in New York, centralist New York. And so moved to St. Louis when I was 8. And when I was 12, and I started practicing or learning about magic when I was 8 years old. Then when I was 12, my mother saw an ad in the newspaper to audition to be a street performer in one of the local outside, I'm going to say mall, but it's really a mall, but restaurants and shops.
Sure.
And they had performers there every weekend during the summer. Jugglers and mimes.
Yeah, open air kind of festival thing.
Exactly. And so she said, "You should do this, honey." She called me honey.
Yeah.
It was weird now that I think about it. Anyway, so she asked
it's
me.
It's your mom. It's not weird.
I guess. Okay. Anyway. Anyway, so.
She grabbed your balls when she said it.
that would be
weird. But she didn't, right?
Like I said, it was weird.
Okay.
So she saw this and said, "You should." I don't know where we're going. She said, "You should do this." So I did. And so I started performing there when I was 12. Wow. And what an experience. And, you know, they say that if you can perform on the street, then you can really do anything because you're dealing with crowds that hecklers and crowds. I mean, you have a benefit of being 12 years old. You don't get as many hecklers. But I did that through my college years, really. When I could come home for summers during college, I would still go back and do that. And so then I I, you know, did a little stint at Faneuil Hall in Boston, etc. Did a Busker Fest in Colorado, and you know, sort of got around.
Yeah, once you're on the street working, you go all kinds of places.
And, yeah. And it was great fun. I would never want to do that now, but it was great fun. It is grueling, man. It is grueling. You know, you are out there hustling. You know, and I would always look at the jugglers. I go, you sons of bitches. You can just throw some clubs up in the air and a crowd forms. What am I going to do? You know? And so that's when I started learning how to eat fire. So I thought, screw this. I'm going to eat fire and just stand there until a crowd forms, then put the sticks away and do my magic act. That's what I did.
Well, yeah, I'm gonna light myself on fire.
That's right.
And see who shows up.
That's exactly right. And it worked. And now I don't need fire anymore because it's stupid.
Entertainment. That's right. It was the beginning of the entertainment business. I'm going to light myself on fire and see if anybody cares. And then, you know,
turns out that's not a smart thing.
I'm going
to
pass the hat.
Yeah, that's right.
That's funny.
Ingesting Coleman fuel into your system is apparently not good for your head.
Yeah, probably.
I heard that.
But I'm going to guess that you learned a lot of things there. Like you said, working with people, connecting, which is what the job really is.
Yeah, no, I learned everything from doing that. I mean, it was an invaluable experience, and I would not have traded that experience for anything. It taught me how to be in front of an audience that I didn't know. Gathering the crowd.
Hostile, perhaps.
Could be. Gathering the crowd, bringing them around, keeping them engaged for X period of time, and then at the end, pitching them, asking them for money. You know, I mean, so you have to be a salesman, you have to be an entertainer, it's such an invaluable experience. And I know that it trained me to do all of the things that I do today.
Now, I know you also kind of teach and lecture comedians on their way up.
Magicians.
Magicians. Yeah. I say comedians.
I mean,
you probably would be good at that too. But this, I'm just guessing, this is some of the stuff you tell them. What do you tell them about how to work a crowd and work a room? Because a lot of people can do the tricks.
Well, you make a good point. And boy, I really appreciate that, because it's we have magic lectures, right?
Yeah.
People are fascinated by how do magicians learn magic, right? And before the days of YouTube, we used to read. And we have lecturers, right? So magicians
You were really nerdy and got beat up a lot, so you stayed in the house a lot and you did your tricks over and over again. So,
That's right. I was nerdy. That's right.
Yeah, that's
right. Exactly. No, I'm so past that.
If you're popular, like captain of the football team, you're not becoming a magician or a stand-up comedian.
That's right. And certainly not a good one.
Or you know, musical theater person. So we got that clear.
That's right. I do love my decks of cards.
So when you weren't getting beaten up, you were at home doing your tricks.
I was. And so the lecturers that are on the circuit, they teach – often we'll teach tricks, right? And magicians want to learn tricks.
Sure.
They want to go to a lecture and learn five tricks that they can go home and do, right? And I chose to take a different tact for when I lecture. And that is to teach, yes, I teach tricks, but to teach the theory behind them, audience management, psychology, manipulating your audience, how to turn a trick into an event, make something that's very simple and turn it. You know, Phil Hartman.
How to make it as difficult as possible.
How to make it look difficult, but how to build it into something bigger.
Got it.
Right?
Yeah.
Kelsey Grammer, they used to say on Cheers.
Yeah.
Right. The writers would go in the back. They would give Kelsey a terrible line to give. And they would sit back and they would watch in the video village and wonder, how is he going to deliver this one? How is he going to make this good? Mm-hmm. And then he would, right? And so how do you take something that's simple, that's just a simple trick, not that interesting, and turn it into something that is impossible, that is a bigger deal, that is emotional, that connects with an audience? And so that's what I care about. And so that's what I teach in my lectures.
That's entertainment.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you're building something. Yeah.
Before we move off the magic thing, I know you have also taught some magic to actors for feature films. Now You See Me, for example, Jesse Eisenberg, X-Files, you taught those guys some of the stuff.
Burt Wonderstone.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't know what my question is. Tell me something or tell me a really
interesting
story
It's interesting. I love working with actors because I come from that world as well. And so I'd like to be able to connect with an actor and teach them, yes, the tricks, right? And on the films, on the TV shows, we talk about the tricks and we learn the tricks. And I also want to work with them so that they can become magicians, embody what it means to be a magician. You know, I'll say, you have a pen there. When a normal person picks up a pen, they pick up the pen. When a magician picks up the pen, they pick it up very differently.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Right? And they have there's a flair to everything they do. When they move something on their table, they're not moving it arbitrarily. They're moving it because they're planning something. They're thinking about what their next move is. Right, or what their move three steps down is, right? And so the way that we carry ourselves as magicians, the way that we observe the world as magicians is very different. And so if an actor is just doing a trick, that's one thing. If an actor is playing the part of a magician, then I want them to embody that while they're playing every scene, right? And not just being who they are, and then they launch into trick mode.
So right? they have a whole consciousness of being a magician.
Yeah.
That they have to open that up for themselves.
That's right.
And figure that out.
That's right. And that's what I'd like to work with them to do. And of course the tricks too.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. That's really cool. Yeah. So I asked you, I said I wanted you to do a couple of tricks, even though this is an audio program and people can't see it. But, you know, I think it's going to be just as entertaining.
This is interesting. I know.
And if I'm wrong, it's going to be totally my fault.
Well, you know, so we used to...
I just always say that because I'm the host of the show. If anything doesn't go right...
That's right.
It's never my guest's fault.
Oh, my God. Finally. It's always been on me.
No. Well, that's why you're
the magic.
That's why you're paying
great.
$100 to be on the show.
Wow.
Because
now I get to do magic tricks and not have it be my fault when it all screws up.
That's exactly right.
You know, it's funny. So magic on the radio. We used to joke about that, right? Magic on the radio. It's fantastic.
It is fantastic.
That's right. Pick a card. Did I get it? Okay. Yeah. So
we're going to do a little magic now in the radio program.
That's right.
You're going to be astounded.
Well, here's what's going to happen.
Tell me what's going to happen.
So I had to think about what could we do that the audience at home could do.
Uh-huh.
Right, so that's what this is. So the audience at home will do this, and so I would encourage them to possibly pause in a moment this audio stream.
Yes,
go get a deck of cards.
Okay,
and then come back. In fact, get a deck of cards and four coins: a penny, a dime, a nickel, and a quarter. And then come back to the radio and pick it up.
Okay, so let's just have a moment of filler in case they're just rummaging now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I see. We could talk about something while they're doing that.
Yeah, you know that kitchen drawer where you just throw all the crap?
Yeah.
And it's not organized.
So what
we're
talking about now is not interesting.
No.
Shouldn't be interesting.
No, this is just...
Right, while they're going. It should just be in the background. We should just be not even really talking about anything.
No, they're looking in the drawer with the rubber bands and the...
Right. There's no real topic happening right now.
No, the little nails. You know those little nails you say, oh, you can use these to
hang up? The tacks.
Picture hanging thing.
Right, the tacks.
You don't want to put them with the other stuff in the garage because they get lost easy.
Well, and then you reach into that drawer and you're poking yourself all
the
time.
Well, that's the downside. But they settle to the bottom.
Those are the sharpest things.
Well, they're meant to be.
Yeah. You think they have their deck of cards now or not?
I hope so. If they haven't, let's just say that they don't deserve to be. Then now they can push the
button. Well, what's sad is if they paused before, now they've got it, and they've come back to now 3 minutes of us talking about the junk drawer. Now what?
No, that's the funny part.
Oh, I see. That was funny.
That's the joke.
Oh, I see.
That's the joke.
I didn't get it.
No, sorry. Nobody else did.
Hey, you know what? Speaking of that, I consulted last year or so on a Chevy Chase pilot that didn't go. But it was Vacation.
Yes.
Chevy Chase. And so his grandkid, I got to teach magic because he was playing. He did magic on the show. Boy, that was really fun to work with. It was so interesting. I don't have any other stories about that, except it was just fun to be there on the set with Chevy Chase and the actor that I was working with and just to teach magic and watch him practice magic and really get good at it, you know, and like all these actors.
All right, I'm just going to have to say for the benefit of our listening audience that I'm totally confused about how we got from the sharp tacks in the junk drawer that poke your fingers, and then that somehow reminded you of Chevy Chase and his grandkid. And if I don't call that out, people are going to think that I edited these two pieces.
Oh, that's
together.
True. No. This is all a stream of consciousness.
You just went off.
I was just thinking about it because I was sitting here with this deck of cards in front of me.
And I just don't want people to blame me for
it. No, it's true. It was a stream of consciousness. It's all me.
That's going to be
this one's. This one's on me.
So we're going to do a joke now. You have a deck of cards, four coins, a penny, a nickel, a dime, and a quarter.
That's right. But we're just working with the cards for now.
Okay.
So I'm going to ask that you take out three cards. Do you remember the three card Monty?
Yes,
have you ever played three-card Monty on
the streets? I lived in New York City.
Yeah, right?
People doing it on the street.
Did anybody ever take you down?
No, it was like, this is a scam, man. I mean, obviously
it's a scam.
No, but I mean, it's obviously a scam.
It's obviously a scam.
That's fine, but...
I remember when I was in New York, I was watching.
If you don't get that that's a scam...
Oh, I know. I was watching, and I was in the back, and this guy's taking down the mark, and he looks up at me, he goes, where is it? Where's the queen? I go, no, I don't want to play this game, please.
Knew where the queen was.
Well, yeah, of course I knew where the queen was, right? Actually, I've got another story about that, too. I just made me think
about
where
the queen was.
Oh.
It's a magic story.
Right, it is a magic story.
It could be some other kind of story.
Yeah, right. I was in Melbourne. So I knew where the queen was, and he goes, no, where is it? I go, please, I don't want to play this game. And he puts out two $100 bills. And I go, oh, my God. He goes, take them. Because he wanted me to play more. I go, no, I don't want them. Because I knew you're not taking the money. Even if you win the money, you're not getting away with the money.
Why? What do they do?
Because you go to the end of the street, and there's the guy who's going to take that money back.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, I mean, that makes sense, but I never thought I would win. So, yeah.
Now, that's a professional game. I just thought of this other story, which I shouldn't even admit, especially to all the viewers. Oh, my God, this is terrible. But I'm going to tell you anyway.
This is sort of funny.
This is why we
it's
sort
live.
Of funny.
This is what the show
oh, my
is for.
God.
Something terrible that is really funny.
When I was in college in Syracuse, New York, at Syracuse University, there was a guy, we called him Monty, right? Down in the alley where all the beer, where all what do they call it? Beer houses?
Yeah.
Clubs were, right? Where they served that beer thing, that beer drink. Yeah. And
did they have beer when you were a kid? Yeah.
I never drank it. But Monty was in the alley, and he would play three card Monty and try to take kids down, and I always ignored him. Right. Okay. So.
Because you had 10 years under your belt by the time you got to college. So, I mean, you knew. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Mm. So, Monty. So I used to play. I used to practice throwing cards. I was fascinated by throwing cards. And so in my little apartment building there in college, I used to throw these cards out the window.
You mean like for accuracy?
Yeah, for accuracy. Right. I would throw them out of the window. Into the street, which, looking back, what was I thinking? I could have killed somebody with those cards. So
the edges are very sharp.
Yes, they are. Yeah. So they used to go in that street. Anyway, days later, whatever it was, I'm walking down the alley. Monty says, "You want to play? Want to play?" And I finally said, "Fine, I'll play." And he beat me. I lost money to this guy. I was a jackass because I was so overly confident that I could do it. And he beat me, that son of a... And then I looked down and I realized he beat me with my cards.
He had picked your cards up off the street.
Yeah, because I was using a different kind of deck.
See, now, when we do the movie of your life, that's going to be in it.
Oh, my God.
You know, like, that's the moment, like, in that Charlie Parker movie that Clint Eastwood made where somebody throws the cymbal and it crashes and it wakes him, and he's like, oh, my God.
That's the moment.
That's the moment where you're really high and you get taken down and you realize you're not as good as you think you are, and it propels you.
That's right. And I said, this will never happen again.
This will never happen again.
That's right. It was crazy.
And you got Monty's name tattooed on your ass.
I will always remember that. Son of a gun.
That's good. So let's do the goddamn
thing. All right,
trick.
So take out three cards. We need a queen of hearts because you're going to follow the queen, and two other number cards. Doesn't matter which.
Do you see them or you don't?
Well, I'm not. I'm on the radio, and people at home.
So you want me to take out the queen of hearts?
Right.
And then two other cards?
Two other cards. So everybody's going to take out three cards.
Oh, so everybody's taking... So they can see the other cards, and they're doing this themselves.
That's right. Just taking out three cards.
Okay.
And the idea is to find the queen, follow the queen. So I want you to take those cards.
Yes.
And now I'm not going to look at you, Denzel, for the rest of this. But you're going to place... Put, turn the, you'll turn the cards face down in a moment with the queen on the top of the packet face down.
Okay.
So that when you're looking at the packet face down, it's the card closest to you. It's the top of the packet.
Okay.
So the queen's on the top.
I've just done that. Okay. So there's the queen on top, queen of hearts, and then there's two other cards.
Right. Now imagine we have to somehow mix those cards up, but there's no operator here. There's no magician throwing the cards. So you're going to have to do it yourself. So with that packet in hand, I want you to hold that packet in hand. Everybody's doing this at home.
Everyone's doing this at home.
I want you to have a secret number, your own number. Don't tell me. And of course, I can't hear anybody at home.
Sure.
So between 1 and 10, keep it small. Smaller, the faster this goes. So between 1 and 10, think of your secret number and don't forget your secret number.
Okay.
And now, at this point, everybody has your own number. You all have your own number. You're going to move the cards from the top of the face-down packet, one at a time, from the top to the bottom, the number of times, one card for every card in your number. So if you had three, if your number was three, you'd move one, two, three cards, one at a time, from the top to the bottom.
Okay.
And you'll do that now.
All right. So, so I'm doing my number. I'm taking the top card and placing it on the bottom.
Right. And then you do as many cards as equal to your number. So if it was 3, 4, 5, all the way up to 10, whatever your number is.
Okay.
Now at this point...
So I've done that.
Now at this point...
Yes.
Hopefully you don't know where the queen is, but you might. So
I
want to get you lost on this.
We only have three cards.
Right. So I want you to do it again.
But my brain is small.
Right. Yeah, okay. I want you to do it again, but a little faster. So everybody do that again, but a little faster.
Same number
of cards. Right? And I'm not counting along with you. I don't know. And at home, I don't know what number you have. Right?
If I get confused, does that really matter?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it could throw things off.
Right,
so now
talking,
at this point...
I'm looking at you.
Well, that's
I'm
the
trying
point.
To make sure you don't
and
cheat.
That is the point. Now, hopefully, you're all a little confused about where the queen is. I'm trying to make this... In fact, you know what? I've got my own number. It's 2. I love that number. That's my number. Why doesn't everybody do that? Take 2 cards. Put it from the top to the bottom. 2 cards. That's my number.
So we're doing 2 more.
In fact, do it faster. Do my number again. Do 2 more. My number again.
Okay.
Right? So now we have no idea where this card is.
I can't know.
I don't know what your number is. In fact, I want to end this with you.
Okay.
Your secret number. Do it one more time. Your secret number from the top to the bottom. Boy, this should confuse everything. Right? Now this is when we go and everybody's putting their number one more on the bottom. Right?
Yep,
good.
There you go.
Everybody's good?
Everybody
so
goes.
Now... We've done your numbers. We've done my number. We ended. In fact, you were the last one to do it with your number, which would throw everything
That's
off,
right.
right? And I don't know what your number is.
Presumably.
Right? At this point is when we bring out the $100 bill and we say, you want to bet on where the queen is?
Wait, when you say we bring out the $100 bill, it means your $100 bill or my $100
bill? Well, I'm not going to give you my money.
Maybe we have one in the junk drawer at home with
That's
the
right.
thumbtacks. Okay.
So now the cards are thoroughly mixed. Though we have no idea where the queen is. My job as the magician over the radio is to find your queen.
Okay.
So I got to think about this.
Okay.
I don't think it's I don't think it's the top card of the face down packet. You can just put that card aside.
Okay. Well, I'm going to take that card and slide it off to the side.
Yeah. And I don't think it's the. No, it's not the next one. So you can put that one aside.
It's the second one either.
Right. So that leaves us with one card in your hand.
That's correct.
With $100 on the table.
Mm-hmm.
If I found the queen, I get $100.
And what if you haven't found the queen?
Then I would guess that you would get it and we'll play again.
I would guess.
Just don't walk to the end of the street.
At some point, somebody's going to give you
That's
a
bite. Right. Don't walk to the end of the street.
Don't walk to the end of the street.
So turn that card over.
So we want to turn this card over.
Hey, it's
the Queen of Hearts.
There it is. Found the Queen.
Fun. On the radio.
On the radio.
See, now that was good because I thought you were going to do a trick, but really I did it. I mean, I did all the stuff.
You did. I didn't touch. I'm not doing anything.
Untouched by human hands.
That's right.
I used to say.
That's right.
Wait. Yeah. Well, that's good.
Maybe we'll come back later in the show and do another trick. We'll see.
And the other two cards are still the same? They haven't changed?
That's right. Now, that would have been a trick.
That would have been a trick.
If the cards in your hand changed.
You've done that. Haven't I seen you do a trick like that?
Well, yeah, but not in somebody else's hand over the radio.
No, I understand. I've seen you do that where you pull the thing and then the card that I have is different than the
things
one I thought I had.
Things change all the time.
And what about the coins? What are we going to do with the coins?
Let's do that. You want to do that later or you want to do that now?
All right. Okay.
we'll work up to doing another trick, I think.
Yeah, I want to follow up on something you mentioned a minute ago.
Yeah.
when you said in the beginning of your show frequently, you say, hello,
hello,
hello, like it's far away, but people are really close. But then you said, I also say it in a kind of creepy way.
Creepy way, hello.
Yeah, hello. Yeah. And one of the things I noticed about you, seeing your act, watching you, you make people uncomfortable.
Yeah, I do.
You do. You must know that about yourself.
I do know that. It's something that I find great joy in.
Yeah, and my question is, when did you discover that you did or could make people uncomfortable? And, what's your relationship with that? I mean, now you say you take great joy in it, but I'm wondering if you ever didn't take great joy in it. There's a dark side to these things.
Yeah, no, that's really it's really interesting that you mention that. There's a fine line, right, between making somebody feel uncomfortable and making them like you, helping them like you.
Yeah, like they're kind of antithetical.
Yeah. No, that's really interesting.
It's not a fine line. They're opposites.
Yeah. Oh, is that
this
right?
This is the thing you haven't realized. You're like, there's a fine line between people liking me and people being uncomfortable. No, they're opposites, man.
Now you've just rocked my world, man. You know what? That's the fun part. I think that's the exploration, right? How do you manage to make people feel uncomfortable and still have them walk away from the show wanting to see you again and feeling like they like you? And that's what I find awesome. That's fun. So that's, wow.
What does that do for your act? Because I've seen it. You do it on purpose. I mean, or either that or you're really insensitive and you have no idea that you make people uncomfortable. But you seem to recognize it and use it. In your work.
I do. When I make people feel uncomfortable, hopefully I'm doing it with a smile, which I think is the interesting take on that. I will be honest. There are moments.
Don't
in
be
my,
honest. This is not that kind of show.
Oh, forget that then.
Go ahead.
I'll say something else then.
No.
But in the past, I have had moments where I have been angry in the show. Right? Which is not good. That's a negative thing.
Like angry at your mom?
No.
Or the world or your
angry
dog?
Angry at the audience. Like,
angry at the audience.
Somebody says something, not a heckler necessarily, but does something that sort of pushes a button to mine. And that's been an exploration that I've had to overcome, and I feel like I have overcome. And maybe that is where some of making people feel uncomfortable comes from. I'm not 100% sure about that, but it's sort of making me think about that.
So you're skirting the question.
I'm trying to figure out what the answer to that question is.
Wait, what was my question again?
Why I make people feel uncomfortable, why I find joy in it, and how I connect that to making people end up liking me, right?
Well, let's take it one at a time. You do get some joy out of providing some discomfort.
Well, because I want to keep the audience on edge. I want to keep them guessing, and I want to... I don't want this just to be a magic show where I just do tricks, right? Where I, you know what? Remind me to come back to this. I have a new act. I've just retired the act that you saw. I've just retired it this year. Uh-huh. After doing it for many, many, many years.
Like Jerry Seinfeld threw away all his jokes and decided to write new ones.
That's right. Yeah. And I've just debuted a new act that has a pretty dark element to it, quite a dark element to it.
Now I'm scared. If you're saying it's pretty dark.
It's dark.
I'm scared, yeah.
It's dark. Yeah, so we should talk about that. But this makes me think about it. But I don't want it to be a series of tricks. I want to find a through line that keeps the audience engaged in a more theatrical way. And I think by making people feel uncomfortable, there's the capacity for a greater impact when there is a positive outcome to a routine or an effect. And it's not just a trick, but now they're engaged in an emotional way.
Yeah.
They're engaged in an emotional way. I think that's... You're making me explore this, which I appreciate.
Yeah.
But I think that's what it is. I think it's... and let me turn the question back on you. When do you recall why or how or when you felt uncomfortable?
In your act.
Uh-huh.
I don't remember. It was about a couple of years ago when I saw you. But I was watching some video in preparation of this. And there's that that clip you have with that woman with that tight dress comes on and you ask her to kiss you through the glass.
Oh, yeah.
And she says, you're making me uncomfortable.
Yes. Yes.
And she really means it.
She really means it, yeah.
And right. Just from what I've learned from going to clown school and other things, that when you bring someone on stage, your number one job is to take care of that person, to have them feel okay, safe, and to make them look good.
Okay.
And in that moment, you seem to be breaking these rules that to me were presented like, don't fuck with people.
Okay, now I need to say this because that's a very important point. One of my pet peeves is when magicians don't take care of their audience members.
Yeah.
So I think it's important to understand the distinction between making somebody feel uncomfortable and making them not happy to be there. Well, there's a distinction.
I'm glad that you're conscious that there's, I mean, like
100% absolutely conscious of that.
You're doing the thing you're doing
intentionally
for theatrical purposes.
For theatrical purposes. When magicians, or anybody, but I'm, of course, my world of magicians, when someone brings someone to stage and treats them poorly, makes fun of them, which I never do.
I never
make fun of my audience members. I never make them feel like they've done something wrong, ever, ever. You know, I put that back on myself, right? I am the idiot. I am the fool, right? And so when a magician does that to somebody, it makes my skin crawl.
Yeah.
And that I can't handle and I will not accept. So when I make somebody feel uncomfortable, it's in the context of the story and it's not about them. It's not about making them feel stupid or making them feel bad.
Well, that's why I wanted to ask about that, because there is a distinction between doing it for effect and as part of the show, or just doing it because you're kind of a creepy jerk.
Right.
You know, and also you said a moment ago, I say this in a kind of creepy way, and so I am interested that you use part of your creepiness or whatever that is, you use that.
So when I come out in that show, I do. When I come out in that show and I say hello, right? I have a lot of energy, big smile. I look at the person that's sitting at my table, right, to help me, because they've been brought out before I've even come out on stage. Two people are put at my table so that they can assist throughout the show. This is a close-up show. It's a very intimate environment. So I put two people at the table so they can be the eyes of the audience. And I look over to my left and I say, hello. Right, and immediately that's a contradiction of the character they've just seen, right? And it's that contradiction that is funny, right? And so, I will then say, I'll look up, and I'll say that was a little creepy, right? And now we'll laugh at it.
Now we laugh at it.
And now I laugh at myself, and I go, that was creepy. What am I doing that for?
Why am I doing
so? It's that moment of uncomfortable, like what is he? Ooh, who's this guy? And now I release that tension. And that's where the fun is. So that's what it's part. It's part of engaging the audience and taking them on a ride and making and changing their emotional, giving them an emotional arc throughout the show.
Yeah.
And that's what it is. But it's never about making somebody feel bad, right?
You also said you build some tension and then you release it.
Build
it and release it.
Build and release.
And I'm just, as a clown, there's a role for that. But as a magician, that also helps distract people. You're doing other things. You know, it takes
well, absolutely,
them.
Yeah.
It obfuscates
well,
the
absolutely.
Subterfuge.
Well, that's a well said,
obfuscates the subterfuge.
Yeah, I mean, I'm
like
going
to
write that down, actually.
Because,
yeah, that's right.
You know, they're fun words.
My next lecture is going to have that.
Yeah.
And I can't even say it now. I need to write it down and look at it several times.
It's a little tongue twister. Once you start to get it, just practice.
That's
every
right.
night before you go to sleep, say,
right.
I obfuscate subterfuge.
But, you know, this is a good point, too. Magicians, we use misdirection. We use psychological methods to distract you, to take you off the scent. And everything that I do in my act, everything I say, even as off the cuff as it is, has a purpose.
Yeah.
Because it's not off the cuff, right? It has a purpose. And it has a psychological intention. And that is to take people off the scent. And so you're right. When I say something that throws people off, we create what's called in magic an offbeat.
Mm-hmm.
And an offbeat is when the audience is off kilter, right? When they off balance.
Yeah.
When their shoulders drop. When in that moment, mm-hmm. in time, that's when you should really should be paying attention.
That's when the magic happens.
That's when the magic happens.
I don't know anything, but I know that.
Yeah.
Now, let's change the subject. Something else you mentioned. What happens when things go wrong? Because they got to go wrong sometimes, either technically for you or the audience doesn't, your assistant doesn't follow, or, yeah, what happens when things crash?
Okay, I'll tell you that, and then I'll also relate it back to a story from one of my performances doing this, debuting this new act. When things go wrong, what do we do? And this is something I talk about in my lectures to other magicians, right? We have outs, right? Magicians have outs, okay? We often will build in outs to when something goes wrong. Boy, I have lots of stories to tell you about this.
We don't have that much time.
So. I know. Jeez, can we extend
the
show?
Just leave out all the pronouns and just go...
Yeah.
Just yes, like now speed I have
to,
through?
Well, then now I have to look up pronoun. That's right. No, when
you can leave out the adverbs, too, if you'd like.
Don't throw me off. I was not an English major. Anyway, so no, when we have outs, we have ways to get out of something. When something goes wrong, we have ways to get out of it. I tell people, magicians in my lectures, don't run when nobody's chasing you. Don't give away the ending, right? When we give away the ending and we telegraph what it is that we're going to be doing, now you are pigeonholing yourself. You're painting yourself into a corner. The audience doesn't know what they're going to see. So if we have the skills and we have... If we're able to back up our magic with sleight of hand and experience, then we can get out of any situation, right?
So be more concrete. What are you talking about?
Okay, so...
Because we don't know what you're talking... I mean,
that's right.
Theoretically,
so,
I get
it's
it.
It's all theoretical, I know. I'm doing a magic trick. Okay, so I'll relate it back to the show that I was breaking in. I had some good friends in the audience, and... They know what was happening. I'm doing my routine, and I swear every trick was about to fail. Every single trick was about to fail. And they knew it, and I knew it. And I would look down at those cards, and I knew they were in the wrong place, right? Or the die on the table was at the wrong number. Everything was going wrong. And I had to use sleight of hand to change the outcome of the trick. Right? To either put the trick back in order or to change the outcome of the trick or to change the result. So let's say I'm doing an effect where a card is going to end up and it's going to be the 10 of diamonds on the table. But I know that's not the 10 of diamonds on the table. You've chosen the 10 of diamonds. You've asked for the 10 of diamonds. There's a face down card on the table. It's supposed to be the 10 of diamonds, but I know it's not the 10 of diamonds.
Yeah.
So now I have to do a little bit of tap dancing. I have to somehow get that to become the 10 of diamonds or get you to change your mind and match the card that's on the table. So by not giving away what the final ending is going to be, I can change it up along the way. But I have to have the skill and the experience to back me up so that I can walk that tightrope. Right, so that we can have a little bit of, so that I like to do a lot of magic where it's not in my hands, where something is happening on the table and I'm away from it. I'm not touching. I'm not manipulating the cards. And so to do that, that's a scary proposition. You have to be either 100% ironclad or have a way to get out of it.
Yeah.
Tony Giorgio, a very famous magician who is this 6 foot. 12 gangster looking Italian guy, and it was a brilliant magician and sleight of hand artist, no longer with us. He told me years ago, magic is like jazz, right? And you have to be able to skip around and change the outcome and manipulate the outcome, and that's the most fun that I have when I come out and I walk a tightrope. And even though I know when I'm going to be presenting, anything could change. And that's the most fun.
I had a guy on last week, a couple episodes ago, named Greg Wilson, who's a stand-up comedian.
Yeah.
The Greg Wilson. He's a gonzo guy. And we had a similar conversation because he said, when I'm out on stage, people aren't sure what I'm going to do.
Right.
And he said, I love to get into a place where the audience is thinking, how the hell is he going to get out of this one?
That's right. That's right. And in fact, we...
You know him?
I know of him.
Yeah.
I don't know him personally. Yeah. And I listened to that podcast. It was great, actually.
Yeah.
And that's an interesting... You know, part of my show, part of my shtick is things going wrong, mm-hmm. right? Which is a very dangerous line to toe. Things going wrong, making the audience feel uncomfortable about things going wrong, and then making them go right. That's sort of, I mean, that's not my thing. Magicians do that all the time.
Sure.
But it's really become part of my character, you know, that we're not really sure how this is going to go, and then you turn it around and it succeeds. That's great fun. And the audience is really can go along on the ride with you and go, ooh, what's going to happen now? Ooh, this isn't going well for him, you know, and then you pull it out. And that's the most fun. It's the most fun because we plan the whole thing, you know.
Where I went with that was
pulling it out.
Bullwinkle.
Oh.
Saying, watch me pull a rabbit out of my hat. And it's a lion and there's a giraffe. And you know what I mean?
Right. Exactly.
Again. And that was the best moment of that whole thing.
That's right.
Hey, Rocky, watch me pull a rabbit out of my hat.
Again.
Must have been the wrong hat. Yeah. All right. I have a few questions here that I kind of ask people. I'm going to do that for you. You have a somewhat sleepy, I'm going to ask again. You have a somewhat quirky sleeping or bedtime ritual. What is it?
Do I? Is that what you're asking me? Or do you know that I do?
I just made a statement.
I see. Because it sort of sounded like you were telling me that you've been looking over my bed and you saw my quirky little bedtime ritual.
I have a clairvoyant quality.
That's scary to me. And I was wondering where that red light in the corner of my room was. I do not have a ritual.
Some kind of quirky sleeping thing, quirky bedtime thing?
You know, I don't, although I sometimes sleep in odd positions, but that's, I don't know if that's quirky or not.
How odd? Hanging from the ceiling?
I used to sleep with my neck almost at a 90-degree angle. It's weird. People would joke about it for years. They would tell me, they would say, I saw you sleeping like this, and my neck was at a 90-degree. It was very strange. I don't know why I like to sleep in that strange position, but it's sort of maybe that's the way I was in the womb. Maybe in the womb, my neck was at a 90-degree angle. I have no strange sleep. No, I don't. I'm going to tell you now I don't, beside that.
Neck at a 90-degree
that's
angle.
Neck at a 90-degree, which is the name of my new book. Neck at a 90-degree angle. Put your neck. No, that's not it.
I think that should be the name of your band.
90 degrees.
Neck at a 90-degree angle.
It's neck at a 90.
All right, let's try another one. As a child, you had an imaginary friend.
I think I might have. I might have. I'm sure that friend went away. I'm sure.
You don't have any recollection of an imaginary friend as a child?
Oh, my God. What does that mean about me if I don't?
Imaginary audience? Maybe you had an imaginary audience.
Well, I was always performing. You know, I have been performing since I was a kid, always.
But that's a real audience.
Yeah, right?
Did you ever imagine yourself like at Madison Square Garden or a crowd of cheering fans? Or?
Well, I suppose we always did, right? All performers do at some point, right? Think about a big show, right?
That's not really an interesting answer. Like, what I'm looking for is for you to say, oh, yeah, you know what? Shit, I remember. I did this. Wow. All right, maybe it's just not a useful question.
Well, it's an interesting question.
Yeah, but that's not the same as a useful question. The question is, as a child, you had an imaginary friend.
Mm.
Your imaginary friend also had an imaginary friend.
You know what? I have to tell you, this is terrible, but I don't have a lot of memory from when I was a kid. I have little spurts of memories that come up. They're there.
That doesn't sound healthy.
It's not healthy.
Little spurts of memory. Sounds kind
of
dirty.
I've lost a lot of lost time.
Sounds dirty.
I have a lot of lost time. What does that mean about me? No, I don't. No, I can't even speak to that.
It means you're an alien replicant, perhaps.
Yeah. Maybe my skin's about to come off.
Oh, yeah. Where's the thing that I push and you shed your skin?
That's right.
Did we do that before? But just button? At the end of the show.
I had that removed, actually. I did have a button, but it was removed that did that.
And what about the moles?
That was
all right. Here, this question you're going to be able to answer. Well, here's... I believe that everyone has a superpower.
Yes.
And it's this quality or energy that just wants to flow through you into the world. And if you figure it out, you just get out of the way and boom. Do you have that? Do you know what that is for you?
I would like to say that it's that's interesting. I would like to say that it's cold reading, that it's the ability to read somebody and know what they're thinking, right? I actually would like to say that it's flying, but that's too easy.
Flying.
True. I mean, I dream about flying all the time. I always dreamt about being able to fly. That's my dream. Levitate, fly. That's my dream. But as a superhero.
No, let's just pause for a moment. You have a lot of dreams about flying.
A lot.
Your whole life.
Yes, my whole life.
Are you in a plane or just.
No. The Greatest American Hero TV show was like my favorite show on television.
And so in this, what kind of flight mode? You could be like floating around or you could be zipping like Superman. What are you doing?
Floating. Yeah. Floating high in the air. And you know what's interesting about that is I have a fear of heights. Huh. Wow. This has been a very fascinating talk for me.
So during waking hours, you have a fear of height. But
yes.
When you're asleep.
That's right. All I want to do is fly.
You're floating.
Yeah. And looking high above the world.
Above the clouds? Below the clouds?
Below. I want to see the world.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, is it like airplane view or kind of like 200 feet? I mean.
No. It's like 200 feet. Yeah. That's right. That's right. I mean, I love to look down and see the vastness of the world mm-hmm. and feel completely weightless. It's an amazing feeling. And so that's in my dreams all the time. That's in my dreams all the time.
And what else happens? So you're floating above the world, places you recognize or places that are new to you?
Mm.
That was a multiple choice question.
It was. I would say both.
Both?
Yeah.
Okay. You can pick both.
It's this sense of freedom. Mm-hmm. It's the sense of freedom. I mean, isn't that what flying is? It's freedom. It's being able to get away, unplant yourself from the earth, and there are no pressures. There's nobody looking at you. Nobody judging you. You can just be totally and undeniably free. And how useful that would be today with our hurricanes, by the way, with being able to get above the earth. I mean, all of these natural disasters, seriously.
So you're floating along.
Yeah.
Can you, are you subject to natural forces or you can kind of direct where you go?
It's interesting. I mean, I know you're, oh, I see what you're saying. You have control. You have control.
You have control.
Absolute control.
Are there places that you like to go or things that you like to see in particular as you're floating along here?
No, I don't think so in particular, no.
Okay.
No, but yeah, it's that sense of freedom. I love to travel and I love to get away. And I for a couple of years, just recently, I was on the road all over the world traveling constantly, and I in many ways felt like I was running away, which is getting away from everything. Mm-hmm. And that was my realistic way of flying. Mm-hmm. You know, just to be able to release yourself and say, I'm forgetting the world for a while and I'm just traveling and going anywhere I want to, you know, anywhere I want to go, but was asked to go.
So two last things on this. Is there any moment or place in waking life that matches this feeling of freedom, et cetera, that you have in your flying dreams?
Mm. Right. Someplace in the world that makes me feel that absolute freedom.
Well, waking, yeah. Is there some connection? Maybe the answer is no.
Well, not yet. I don't think I've encountered that yet. I mean, there's places in the world that I love and that I find joyful. And you know what? It might be, honestly, now that I think about it, I would have to say Norway. Wow. Norway. The feeling I had in Norway was so freeing, so peaceful. You go, I could be, you know, I'm going to add another one to the mix, the countryside of Tuscany. Wow. Tuscany. You look out on the fields and you are swept away to a new world, an old world.
1,000 years ago.
Yeah. And you, everywhere you look is a painting. You say, well, that's where the paintings come from. Right? And boy, that's right. And in those moments, it's absolute peace and nothing else matters. I would say that those two parts of the world so far are where I felt that. I'll be spending a lot of time in New Zealand coming up in a couple of months, and I have a feeling I'm going to feel the same way there.
All right. My last question on this is, I noticed now that Levitt, your last name.
No?
Levitate.
Not. Oh, yes, that's right.
Did you ever recognize and connect?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, Levitate.
I mean, I never did, but it's not my last name.
Yeah, no, absolutely, Levitate.
Yeah.
Sure, 100%. Isn't that interesting? And I want to fly and levitate.
Well, and you're
You've
afraid of heights when you're awake.
Yeah, it's true.
Although that's all...
It's true. There's a lot of psychological... There's bad stuff. There's stuff to explore there. I need to talk to a therapist. I really need to talk to a therapist.
Okay, you can, but do me a favor.
Yes.
Don't try to figure anything out.
No?
No. This is...
I haven't until this moment. I haven't thought about this until you put this in front of me in this podcast.
Well, that's good. I absolutely believe that there is value in bringing things from our subconscious or the liminal zone of our peripheral consciousness into a more conscious field, right? Just like peripheral vision,
sure.
You can bring it in. But I am not interested in finding a single answer. I am much more interested in finding as many possible answers. I think that that is the more fruitful path. So these things have come up, and you've said, wow, these things are super interesting. I want to keep it complex and keep it confusing, and I don't want to reduce it back down to something that you can, quote-unquote, understand.
I think that makes sense.
That's my superpower.
Yeah. I mean,
no, it really,
this is, I mean, quite insightful for me.
Adding confusion. No, this is my superpower. Adding confusion, uncertainty, and mystery to areas of our lives that we think we had nailed down or that we understood and were unexamined.
Well, now,
that's
think
my
about
superpower.
This. Isn't that, by doing that, aren't you causing someone to become unsettled and uncomfortable?
Absolutely.
And isn't that interesting? That's what I try to
That's
do.
That's on brand for me.
Making people feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So we're the same.
That's why you're on the show. You asked me in the beginning, why am I on the show? Well, I'm telling you, because we're both kind of jerky guys that make people uncomfortable.
And then make them smile at the end of it.
That's right.
Right, because that exploration will only lead to a positive outcome, because we do get too settled. We do get too complacent.
Well, and what's entertainment? People want to be taken out of the place they know to have something fresh and to have some things challenged for them.
Sure.
What do they believe in? Who they root for?
That's right.
Yeah. You know, because we have this advertising thing in common also. I wrote a new tagline for myself recently.
Yes.
A fly in the ointment. The fly in the ointment. That's me. I'm the fly in the ointment.
Wow, I love that.
Yeah. And it is. It's this
great
irritating...
Line.
It's an irritating quality that I bring to people, but they like it.
Oh,
or they don't, and then you know that's not my people.
I just want to pet you. Is that weird?
Yeah. here's something else.
Yeah.
You may or may not know, I have a thing in my own world where I've given my friends and family permission to hit me in the face with a pie anytime and without warning.
I think I did know that.
And it's only because it makes people happy, but it's only because it makes people happy. And other things have happened for me. That's not important. My question for you. You're going to get hit in the face with a pie.
Mm-hmm. Some point.
You get to choose who you want to throw that pie.
Mm.
And normally pies are thrown with some aggressiveness, but you know what? You're going to receive this pie with as much love and generosity as you can. You're going to give someone permission to do a thing that they've never had permission to do, which is this thing. And so it's a generous act. So you're receiving this with love. Who would you like to hit you in the face with a pie? It can be anyone living
my
or
mom.
Dead. History.
My mom.
Your mom. Yeah, tell me why.
My mom, and I will say this about both of my parents, are the... But I think about my mom, both my parents, but I really think about my mom always smiling and laughing. She finds such joy in life, as do both of my parents. That's the thing that my parents bring to this world. But I see my mother laughing so much, and she would crack up at doing this. She would light up at doing this, and that brings me immense joy. To think of my mom throwing a pie in my face, because she would laugh, I would laugh, My dad would laugh, and that would make me so happy. She would find so much joy in that.
So this is my invitation to you. You can make this offer to whomever you want out in the world. and it's just for the reason that you're enjoying right now.
Yeah.
It's going to make your parents happy, and you're going to share that with them.
I love it.
So feel free. There's also our Facebook page, Pie Yourself Free, which is around this issue of giving this gift.
Such
to
a great
people.
Idea. Yeah. Well, here's what's going to happen. I'm going to tell my parents about this podcast.
Okay.
And I'm going home in a couple of weeks to see my parents. Now, I don't know when this podcast is airing. Maybe before that, maybe after that.
We could help you out in that.
Yeah,
way.
Right. Yeah. And that there it is. I mean, the invitation's already put out there. And isn't that the most fun? To not ever say a word about it ever again. But the invitation's out there. It's in the digital world now.
So your mom...
So my mom is hearing this invitation.
You're giving her permission.
Well, I think I've done that.
When are you headed to St. Louis?
23rd of October.
All right, I'll make sure you get on the air before. so that mom can hear this.
Yeah, and I'll just say you should listen to the podcast.
All right, let's do another thing. One last thing I like to do on this show is to anagram stuff and see what comes out, because I think that other meanings are revealed, and it's not prestidigitation, but it's something like that. It's not like that. Anyway, the question for you is, when you see what some of these things are, if any of them kind of ring a bell. You could read these first three. Jonathan Levitt anagrammed.
Oh, wow. Anagrams for Jonathan Levitt. So we have one, Loathe Ninja TV.
Yeah, do you watch a lot of Ninja
TV? I have to tell you, you are so right I loathe Ninja TV.
Yeah, I thought that one rang, that clairvoyant.
Because it's so not right. I mean, Ninja TV is, well, you know, I have images of the 70s, mm-hmm. right? Ninja TV, really bad, schlocky.
Very exploitative of ninjas.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, they're people too.
Yeah. Before they had a union, you know what I mean?
And then
you get the ninjas from
But
overseas.
You can't even find that union. That's the thing. It's so shadowy.
Number two.
Okay.
Number two.
Number two. That No Javelin. That's a weird one.
I just thought it could be like an explanation or an exclamation.
That No Javelin.
Yeah, like...
Like that's not a like a like the
not like your a, not your father's Oldsmobile.
That no javelin like the typical javelin hit. Like if I'm throwing a javelin, that's not the way we do that. That's not the way I do it. I mean, so if you think about typical, you know, somebody learning magic and the way they throw a javelin, the way they do a trick.
Yeah,
but that no javelin. I'm not doing it that way.
No, it was closest.
Yeah, it was close though. Number three, Jan hit on valet. Jan hit on valet.
You know someone named Jan?
I do know someone named Jan. It's awful that you even would say that about my friend Jan.
Did you ever date anyone named Jan and you took her to dinner and then she hit on the valet? And
oh, Jan hit on valet. I took that as a negative. Like Jan got hit by a valet.
Oh, have you ever?
I went that way.
Slug Jan.
Right. I went the angry way. You said you were hit on the Jan was hit on by a valet.
No. The Jan hit on. The valet.
Jan hit on the valet.
She dumped you and hit on the valet.
Jan, that's sniveling.
Yeah.
No, I never knew a Jan that hit on a valet that I knew.
All right, don't tell Jan to listen to the podcast.
No, Jan's never listened to this. Okay.
So none of those really.
No. But Loathe Ninja TV really hit me.
Loathe Ninja TV.
It's true. The Magic Castle.
Now, there are some good animals
for this one.
What
right?
What do you got there?
By the way, impressive. Galactic Themes.
That was top of the list.
Man.
Galactic Themes is like immediately, boom. Magic Castle.
No, that's good.
Yeah.
And it is. You have to visit the Magic Castle. It's someplace so special. I have to tell you a story. This is so great. This is why I thought about this morning. I got a text from a friend, and I want to write a little bit, an essay on why I love the Magic Castle. Because it's easy to get complacent, right? Here's this magical place that takes you back, teleports you back to being a kid. And you walk into this place. And what I love to do is bring people that have never been to the Magic Castle. And they walk in and you get that same energy and that same feeling. And it reminds you why you love that place. That it takes you back to
being a kid, where we can be swept away in a world of mystery. And and I have a friend who has a kid who's a she's turning eight. I think turned eight yesterday, or 2 days ago. Yesterday, I think. And she loves magic, and so she'll send me magic videos of her doing magic, and I'll send her some videos, and she loves it so much. And I took her to the Magic Castle for brunch. You have to be 21 or older to get in the evenings, but okay. On the weekends you can bring in younger people,
okay.
And for brunch during the day, just during the day. And I brought her and the family a couple weeks ago, and my friend just wrote me this morning and said, I think you've changed her life, you know, and wow.
Yeah,
the Magic Castle, Galactic Themes. I mean, it really
Galactic Themes,
does
yeah.
have that. Number two, gets the acclaim.
That was
it's true. You know, Magic Castle Magicians get the
straightforward.
Yeah, right.
Magic
gets
Castle,
the acclaim. That's what we
acclaim.
Do, yeah. Right? It does. Attach mice legs.
Attach mice legs. I thought could be. I'd like to see that trick. I'm not sure what we're attaching the mice legs
well, that's,
to.
That's sick. That's the sick magic.
That's
and there's a, I'm sure there's a magician in the world doing sick magic with mice legs.
Because then there are mice without legs.
And we have to attach them.
Well, but I mean...
Or detach them and then it...
Well, they have to be detached to be attached.
It's like a Frankenstein kind of act.
Yeah, I don't know.
Ooh.
Anyway.
Tamale chick gets what? Gets what? Tamale chick... Oh, is it chick or chic? Chic.
No, I thought it was chick. Didn't
C-H-I-C?
Did I rearrange the words that say chick gets tamale? That's what I meant to do.
Oh, chick gets tamale.
Yeah, it was just after the show, your date.
That makes more sense. Your chick date, gets tamale, yeah.
Your date orders a tamale.
Well, because are you saying the restaurant at the Magic Castle is not, they have to now go out for tamales after the show?
Well, sometimes you need a little nightcap after, you know, get
chick
out
gets
there kind of late.
The chick gets tamale.
Yeah, the chick you picked up at the Magic Castle, you take her to a
moving on.
Taco truck.
Ecstatic ham leg.
Then you wonder why she went after the valet.
Right.
Ecstatic ham leg. Have you ever seen one of those?
No, have you? What, a ham leg or an ecstatic ham leg?
An ecstatic ham leg.
Well, a ham leg. I've eaten pig's knee in Germany. Does that count? No.
It's jovial. In Germany, they have jovial pig knee, but it's in Spain where they have the ecstatic
ham leg.
Yeah. Jovial pig knee. That actually.
It sounds like it would be a dish.
In Germany.
Yeah.
Yeah, in Germany.
I mean, because I, you know what? It's when I was eating pig knee, mm-hmm. We were jovial. We were in a beer hall. We were wearing hats,
yeah.
Drinking a lot of beer.
Yeah.
We were all very jovial. There's no doubt that that pig knee was probably a jovial
natural.
Pig.
It's a natural.
Yeah, that makes
all
sense.
Right, we got one more in there?
No, that's it. Thank goodness.
That's it. But the ones that made Loathe Ninja TV.
That's the one that connects with me.
And for the Magic Castle.
Galactic Themes.
Galactic Themes, yeah.
No doubt about it.
Okay.
Yeah, I love that. Right. Loathe Ninja TV. And I have to tell you, I would see Ninja TV. I can imagine that happening at the Magic Castle back in the 70s on a TV show. That they would be coming down the band, you know, the stairway, the stairs as ninjas. That all seems to mesh.
Yeah. Well, now I'm fixated about this. Ninja exploitation, you know, because people get
sad,
populations that are not fully represented within our political and cultural system,
right.
Often exploited for their vulnerabilities. And yeah,
ninja, well, we ninja. Should keep all ninjas out with a wall.
Ninja TV, yeah. Anyway, poor ninjas.
Poor ninjas.
Well, I'm sorry to say we're running out of time.
Oh my God, this is amazing.
We can keep talking. I mean, we could, but we have to end this.
I've had so much fun doing this. You've made me think about myself and reached into the depths of my mind, which I'm fascinated by. You know, mentalism is a part of my magic thing, and reading minds and
yeah.
And like I said, cold reading and understanding what people are thinking. And I am fascinated by that, by being able to tap in to something. And, you know, we and even if it's a magic trick that is built into something more emotional and connected on a mentalism level, that's what I love, is to make people think, wow, maybe there's something deeper going on.
Yeah. Well, I would like to thank my guest, magician, actor, host, celebrity judge. I wanted to ask you, like, what does it take to be a celebrity judge? What is that job really like? But we ran out of time. We're going to have to do that later, next time when you come back.
Okay.
Jonathan Levitt, yeah, thank you for coming in this week. If you would like to buy a Comedy Death Star coffee mug, you can email me at comedydeathstar@acsdigital.tv. At least it wasn't me that forgot to put my phone off. Dylan Vigil is our producer and engineer. Our theme music was written and performed by Dean Mermel. You've been listening to Comedy Death Star, the official podcast of Actors Comedy Studio, right here in Hollywood, USA. I'm your host, Denzel Myers. Thanks for listening, and we will be back next week.